high school down here. I used to get Irish papers, the Irish World and the Gaelic American. And the American Irish Historical Society were advertising they were going to sell some of their surplus books back in New York.
Right.
So I bought some of them.
Oh my goodness.
And they wrote to me then, after, or wrote to me after, they asked me if I'd be interested in writing an article about the Irish in Montana.
Yeah.
They didn't know I was a kid, you know.
Yeah.
My English mechanics weren't very good then, they're not much better now.
Yeah.
But I did do some research.
Yes.
And I sent it back, and nothing came of it. They haven't published a journal in many years, you know.
Yeah.
But I did, I have a lot of miscellaneous stuff about the Irish in Montana, you know.
Do you still have the article that you wrote, Tom?
No, I said it was pretty bad.
Yeah. Oh, but still.
But I did do some research, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I got a bunch of that stuff.
Great.
Here.
Yeah, we'll go through all of that. Do you want me to just put on some of these and see what we've got?
No, I think with this natural light from the window, we're going to be great.
Can we just
control
this and just
do it? Sure. I mean, it's going to be mixing light sources, so it's going to give you a weird skin tone. Because it'll be tungsten in the daylight. But
no.
I think that's going to be nice and bright.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tom, tell me your. You have your Zoom set up too?
And I'm rolling.
Oh, okay. Tell me your full name, Tom, and your date of birth.
Thomas Francis Kelly, in November 3rd, 1932.
And you were born here in Butte?
Yeah, Dublin Gulch. Yeah.
So, just for the record, I'm Bernadette Sweeney here interviewing Tom Kelly for The Gathering, Collected Oral Histories of the Irish in Montana. It's December 22nd and we're at Tom's home in Copper Street in Butte. And also with me is videographer Patrick Cook. Tom, tell me about what you know about your Irish background.
My family all came from Cork, from Bearhaven,
mm-hmm.
like most of the Irish in Butte.
Yes.
And my mother's father was a Daly, and he was born in, his name was Simon Daly, and he was born in New Jersey. His brothers were born in Ireland, excuse me. He was raised in an orphanage in New Jersey, and he was adopted by a family named Keegan, and they took him out to Butte, and he settled up in Butchertown, which is up north of Walkerville. And he was pretty well educated. Most of the Irish, they went to work as soon as they could walk, you know.
Yeah.
But he was pretty had a year of college.
Oh.
And he went to a little Catholic college down in Salt Lake called Holy Name. It's not there anymore. But he was a ship boss. He lived up in Dublin Gulch, and he was a ship boss at the Emma Mine down here, where they hold the mass during the Irish. That was the Emma, and he almost got kicked to death by a mule, broke every bone in his body. He couldn't do much after that, so he's tending bar for Tammany Sullivan in his bar up in North Main Street,
mm-hmm.
and. The pipes froze one winter there, and he went down to free the pipes with gasoline, and he got caught in fire, and he was burned pretty bad. So he had a rough life.
Yeah. What was his full name?
Simon Daly.
Simon Daly.
Uh-huh. I read an article once that in the Irish clan system, that different families had different functions, and they were hereditary. They were passed down from father to son. And the article said that some of these families are still in the same occupations that they're for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much true in my family. The Dalys were a literary family. They were poets and genealogists and historians. And they used to hire out some of the larger Irish clans. And most of the Irish clans had no Daly as a historian. My father's family were Harringtons and Kellys, and I'm a Cork Kelly, and we're not related to the other Kellys. We spelled our name differently than Gaelic.
Right.
We spelled our name O-C-O-I-L-L-E, O'Coley, and it means woods or forest.
Quilla, yeah.
Yeah, and all my family, as far back as I can go, have been woodworkers. They've been carpenters and sawyers, and they still are. they're still doing the same thing they did for hundreds of years, you know, which was kind of weird, you know. Not to change the subject, but Bing Crosby, he was born over in Spokane there. He was a big movie star when I was a kid. They used to call him the King of the Crooners. And his mother's family, the Harrigans, they came from Bantry. His father's family, I don't know where they came from, but Crosby in Gaelic means crooner. That's weird.
It is.
And my the Kellys and the Harringtons, they came from a tribe called the Corkalee, and they originated along the banks of the Bandon River, across from the mighty McCarthy's, across the river from the mighty McCarthy's. And as far as I know, they've always been woodworkers. My great-grandfather, he was Sawyer and a carpenter. He worked at the sawmill in Bearhaven, and he framed timbers for the mines at Hungry Hill. And my grandfather did too. He was a carpenter and a sawyer.
Could you repeat what he did for the mines at Hungry Hill?
He was a he framed the timbers.
Framed the timbers.
You know, yeah. They do that with chainsaws now, but it was all hard work then. And he had 10 kids, and they all came to America, I think, except one. And most of them were carpenters. My grandfather was a carpenter. He had a big toolbox. I don't know how he got it all the way from Ireland, but he did. He dragged that with him. Mm-hmm. And he went out to Fall River, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Where most of the Butte Irish, they came from Bearhaven. They didn't go to Boston or New York. They landed at Fall River. Some of them settled there. And he went out to northern Michigan to work in the mines and the copper country.
Mm-hmm.
And and he met my grandmother out in Michigan. They came from the same part of Ireland. She was a Harrington. And they got married in Sacred Heart Church in Houghton, Michigan. In her 1880s, he went down to Tombstone and Bisbee, Arizona, and he worked the mines there. In the 1880s, I figure Wyatt Earp was probably the marshal down there then. And then he went up to Aspen, Colorado, and worked in the mines there, framing timbers. And he came up here, he got a job framing timbers up at the St. Lawrence and the Anaconda.
And what was his full name, Tom?
John J. Kelly, Jack Kelly, he called him. Uh-huh. And he, three or four mines on the other side of the hill where the pit is now, and there was a big flight of stairs going down there. And he used to frame the timbers up here for the Anaconda and the St. Lawrence. Then he'd go down to Calusa and walk down these stairs and frame the timbers down there. And one day he went down and he fell, he broke his neck, and he found his body up there. They don't know if he had a heart attack and fell, or he just fell and broke his neck, but
yeah.
That's where he got killed anyway.
Oh.
And he had 10 kids raised up in Dublin Gulch. This house here was up in Dublin Gulch, right where the Kelly engine room is now.
This actual house?
Yeah. Yeah, the company bought us out back in 1948.
Uh-huh.
And this was a company house, this house here. And they traded us this house for this house, and we bought this back off of them and moved this down and sold that house. And this house here was the Rimmer O'Neill. He was Marcus Daly's right hand man on the hill. He was the superintendent of the Bell Diamond and the superintendent of the Anaconda in the St. Lawrence. And the original people that lived there were O'Briens, and they had a log cabin right here. And there's a log cabin right next to it. This is where Butte began, right here. This is called Town Gulch.
Here on Copper Street?
Yeah, this gulch going up there. And the reason it was called Town Gulch was the only part of the hill that had a good stand of timber. There was really a lot of timber here. So all these houses up here were actually log homes. I was born and raised in a log home up in the gulch during the Depression.
Yeah.
And There was, they used to, the Anaconda Company, when their equipment had come into the, on the railroad, they had unloaded down the warehouse district, they would haul it up the Anaconda Road. And if the road was too steep, or too heavy a road for the horses, they would double the teams of horses. There was a livery stable right over here. And they called this doubling culch, because they doubled up the horse teams.
Yeah.
And the Irish said here, kind of settled here, they thought of the same doubling, so doubling gulch became doubling gulch.
Oh, I never knew.
Yeah. And the O'Briens lived here in the Sierra. He was really a pioneer, Dan O'Brien. He came here in the 1870s. And he built this here house that's out there. And he committed suicide at that house over there. And he was related to the O'Neills, and the Rimmer O'Neill, like I said, he was the superintendent of the St. Lawrence and the Anaconda. And he got killed over in the Boulder Hot Springs. He was swimming in the nighttime over there, and he dived in and he hit his head in the ground. And he has still a family here, Peggy O'Neill, and he had a son named Tom O'Neill. He was in the Marine Corps, and he got out of the Marine Corps, he got on the police department, and he got killed in a shootout down here on South Main Street there. A guy named Knight shot him, and Johnny Dugan, in that house, lived right up there. He was, that house that's right up there, Brown House.
Yeah.
He was the chief of police, and he was the Owen Dugan's mortuary.
Yes.
He was the chief of police there, so he killed Knight, he shot Knight. So it was a pretty lively place.
Gosh.
The Earps, you know, Wyatt Earp,
mm-hmm.
and them, they were a Scots-Irish from Ulster. And one of them, Morgan, he was a police officer here. And he owned half interest in a bar down here, and he killed a guy in a gunfight here on Main and Broadway. Billy Budd, his name was, he shot him in a gunfight. Then he went down to Arizona, he got involved in the OK Corral. He was wounded in the OK Corral, and a couple of weeks later he got to, or he went into a pool hall, and he got killed in a gunfight there. So, pretty...
You're
pretty
putting the wild into the Wild West yourself.
Oh, gee. Yeah. Well, anyway, I kind of got off the track there, but my family belonged to a tribe called the Corkalee, and they're in West Cork. And they were a seafaring family. My family weren't very important. The Cork Kellys weren't very important. The main families were the O'Larrys and the O'Driscolls. And they were supposed to have been the first Christians in Ireland. They're a seafaring family. And they traded with the Roman ports in Britain and possibly in Normandy and Brittany.
Mm-hmm.
And they became Christian before Patrick came to Ireland, according to legend.
Right.
And
You mentioned your grandfather and his toolbox. Did you know your grandfather, Tom?
No, most of my grandfathers died before I was born.
But did you see the toolbox?
Oh yeah, I gave it to my nephews. Now, my family are still doing woodwork.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Oh, so your nephew is using it?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And half those tools were handmade, you know.
Oh, that's marvelous.
My grandfather, he did the woodwork on Bull Rock. The lighthouse on Bull Rock, which is the last piece of Ireland.
Yes.
After Bull Rock, it's Boston, you know.
Yeah.
And he did the woodwork there. And my family did all the woodwork in St. Mary's Church up here. They built all the pews in St. Mary's Church. And I never had an inclination to be a carpenter, but my sister and I owned two small tree farms. Unfortunately, the pine beetles killed all my timber, you know. But that's the way it goes. And my nephews, they both had degrees from industrial arts from Western Montana, and they're doing woodwork up in Columbia Falls.
Yeah.
And they did all the woodwork down for the legal system down in Northern California. So they're still doing carpentry work, you know. They're,
it's in the blood.
It's in the blood, yeah.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Which church did you say the pews?
St. Mary's,
St. Mary's
right up here.
Yeah. So your father was one of a large family then?
Yeah, there were 10 in my father's family, 9 in my mother's.
So tell me a little bit about your mother's family.
The Daly's, I told you about my
yes,
grandfather,
yeah.
But my aunt, his wife, she wasn't Irish, she was English Australian.
Mm-hmm.
She was from Adelaide, but she lived up in the Gulch and they got married.
So your mother was one of 9?
Yeah.
And what was her name?
Daly.
Her first name?
Adelaide. She's named as Adelaide, that's where my grandmother was born.
Oh, so she named her after that?
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
So she was Adelaide Daly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can remember on Christmas Eve we'd walk over the tracks to midnight mass at St. Mary's, and after midnight mass we'd all go back to the family home up in the Gulch, and all the relatives would gather. 3 o'clock in the morning they had a big feast. 3 o'clock in the morning, what they did in Ireland, it was duck. The only time we'd ever eat duck was Christmas, but it was an Irish custom. You know?
And so your your father, what was his full name?
Tom Kelly.
He was Tom, like
Tom Cell, yeah.
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 And he worked?
He worked in the machine shop right up on the end kind of road here. Yeah.
So tell me about your own family, your upbringing.
I have two sisters, one up in Columbia Falls and one over in Boulder.
Mm-hmm.
And one up in Columbia Falls, she has a home down in Lake Havasu, so she spent the winters down there. He's a pretty good artist. Yeah, she painted that picture right back there.
The top, both of them?
No, I painted the one in the top, though. She painted the one in the bottom.
Oh,
both my sisters are pretty good artists.
They're gorgeous.
Yeah.
And what are your sisters' names, Tom?
Beverly and Leah.
So you mentioned there the big get-together.
Yeah,
at
3 o'clock in the morning. And then, of course, St. Stephen's Day, we went out on the Wren, you know.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, I can still remember some of the words to it. As I went down to Brandy Hall, I spied the Wren upon the wall. I held with my stick, and I gave him a lick, and I brought him here to show you all. And they give you nickels and dimes and apples, you know. But we didn't.
You did the Wren here in Butte?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
When would that have been, Tom?
1930s. 1940s.
My goodness.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we didn't. But we didn't know it was Irish, you know.
Yeah.
And we got down here in Fintown, they started calling the cops, and we said, what's wrong with these people? You know, this is St. Stephen's Day, you know.
Yeah, and did you used to play music, or was it?
No, you get pots and pans, and beat the pots and pans, and we'd sing the Wren song.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if they didn't give you that, they gave you something, you sang bottles of whiskey, buckets of beer, wish you all a happy new year. If they didn't give you something, they had another song. It wasn't very nice. Fortunately, I don't remember it. But that was, hell yeah, St. Stephen's Day was a big day for us up in the Gulch. Yeah.
There's an Irish playwright, Vincent Woods, and I remember talking to him about the Wren.
Oh.
And he remembers it as a child in Sligo, in Leitrim, where he's
from. Oh, yeah.
And he used to say that the Wren boys were almost like unofficial gate crashers, you know, that they'd come and you know, if they got what they wanted, that was fine, but if they didn't, they'd bring bad luck or a bad wish to the
house. There's an article in the Irish Voice this week about the Wren.
So you remember doing that as a child?
Oh, sure, yeah.
And how many would have gone around, Tom?
Oh, all the whole neighborhood, all the whole Gulch gang, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, was it children or a mixture of children and adults?
Oh, no, just kids.
Just kids?
Yeah, just kids, yeah.
And was it boys and girls?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And would you dress up?
No, we didn't dress up, no.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-uh. They did back in Ireland.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know the whole story about the Wren, you know, how St. Stephen was hiding from the Romans, and you know all that probably.
Tell me again for the recording.
Oh yeah, well, St. Stephen the Martyr, the Romans were coming after him during one of the persecutions, and he hid in a bunch of bushes. When the Romans came by, they were walking by, but a little wren landed on top of the bushes and started chirping, so he betrayed him, so the wren became the Judas. Betrayed him. Is that what you got to?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So and then he became the Judas. So they every day in St. Stephen's Day in Ireland, I understand they kill a wren and they tie him onto the back of the Christmas tree. We use the turkey, head of the turkey we put on the back, substitute for the wren. And then they go around on the wren. My my grandparents were both bilingual. They're both Gaelic and Irish. My father, I remember him, he used to tell me a story in Gaelic that his father told him. It's about Daniel O'Connell. He was at a party one night and there was a plot to poison him. And the maid in the house was an Irish girl, and she didn't know how to warn him without getting in trouble. So she walked over to him and spoke to him in Gaelic. And my father told me all this in Gaelic. I don't remember any of it, you know.
Right.
About 20 years ago, I was going to Helena one night with my friend Jim Murphy, and my car broke down. And the highway patrol gave me a ride into Townsend. And we went went in this bar, and I met this girl I knew from Melrose. Her name was Peterson. She was a Swedish-Irish girl. And she was with some Irish girl there, and she said, I told this girl that you're from Dublin, and I said, or from Ireland, talk to him. And so she came over to me, and I said, Kunastantu. And she said, oh, you're not Irish, you're an American, you know. But she knew it. And she was an Orangeman.
Yes.
She was married to the county attorney over there. Her name was Foss. She had been a model in Dublin, or in London. Her name was Dalton, her unmarried name. But her father was a bee special, you know.
Oh.
But her mother was a Catholic from Moy in County Cork.
Oh.
And we started talking, and we got arguing, and she called me a dirty Catholic Mick. And then she apologized, and she showed me rosary beads that her mother gave her.
Right.
Because the North Irish are like that. They don't know who they are. They have identity crisis. They don't know who they are. It depends on who they're talking to. In England, they're Irish. When they go to Ireland, they're English. They come here, they don't know who they are.
Yeah.
But I thought I'd tell you about that. Kunastan, just the way I spoke it, you know, she knew I wasn't from Ireland.
Yeah. So you mentioned the wren there, and the ceremony of after midnight mass, rather, of everybody getting together.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other moments during the year where there was like social gatherings or moments that were particular to the Irish background?
They used to have Irish dances out here, but I didn't know much about those. In fact, I don't even know where they held them at, you know. But I'm a cousin to Con Kelly from Anaconda Company. And he was a ruthless man. He was a ruthless guy. All those company men were, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my family didn't have much to do with him because he was my family were all involved with the unions. And he lived up in the Core Terrace. That's right up above Dublin Gulch here.
Mm-hmm.
And he had two, his father, Jerry, and my grandfather were first cousins. And we didn't get along. I listened to PBS a lot, public radio, and they have good music on there. And they're always advertising a place called Sean Kelly's down in Missoula.
Yeah.
And I didn't pay attention to it, but I went up. My sister was living up at Sealy Lake at the time, and I went up to see her. And I stopped in this here restaurant, and I bought a Missoula paper, and there was an ad there about Sean Kelly's, you know. And I'm reading about Sean Kelly's, and recently I see his names popping out, Allie Hayes and Belly Donegan. And here the place is named after my great-grandfather. Isn't that weird?
Sean Kelly's his name?
Yeah,
after.
My great-grandfather's been dead 100 years. He never came to America.
Yeah.
He was born and raised in Ireland, and I got a bar named after him in Missoula, Montana. I couldn't believe it.
And so are you related to the people who own the bar?
Yeah. I have a cousin in Missoula. His name is Kelly Larry, and he's a stockbroker there.
Yeah.
But he opened Kelly, Sean Kelly's, and he named it after his great grandfather, who was also my great grandfather.
Hmm.
That's weird.
That is.
Yeah. I'll show you the picture before you leave here,
yeah.
The part I got out of the newspaper, you know.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was St. Patrick's Day celebrated when you were growing up in Butte?
Just about, not really. The last, the 1919, the 2000 march in the St. Patrick's Day parade here, in 1920, over 10,000 marched in the St. Patrick's Day parade. That's when there was trouble, and they had a parade on Easter Monday, too.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a place you went, like Boyle's Bar, that was down here in the Warehouse District. That's where all the Irish congregated on St. Patrick's Day. But then later they started it up again. Though. But they had a lot of trouble here during the Black and Tan War. You know.
Yeah.
They had a lot of trouble. And that Daly and Shea Mortuary is still down here. It's down by St. Patrick's Church.
Mm-hmm.
They used to use caskets to smuggle weapons into Ireland. And they would smuggle people out in caskets. You know. I knew a guy named Shea up here. He came out here in a casket from Ireland.
He came here from Ireland
in a
burial casket.
Well, what they do, they get them on the ship, and most of the British Merchant Navy were Irish, most of them. Once they got them on a merchant ship, he came out, you know, but to get them on the ship and off the ship, he had to go with the casket. They ship them, and they ship the casket to Butte, and they ship guns back. So, I'm talking about Con Kelly.
Yeah.
I'm kind of bouncing around here. I'm probably.
No, bounce away. It's great.
Well, right here was Fintown, and the Finn Hall was right here, and the Pearson Connolly Club. They had their offices in the Finn Hall. The Finns and the Irish, they had kind of a love-hate relationship. You know, they competed for jobs in the mine, but politically they leaned to the left. You know. So they kind of got along good that way, and then so you know,
your cousin Con.
Oh yeah, Con. He had a brother named John, and they lived up in the Court Terrace up here in the top of you know where the deal is for the mine disaster up there?
Yeah.
Yeah, he used to live up there in Court Terrace. And John, he was a pretty good lawyer. Marcus Daly offered to educate both the Kelly brothers, but I don't know if he ever did or not. Bob McCarthy told me he did educate them, but I don't know if he did or not. But anyway, they were both pretty good lawyers. John was probably a better lawyer than Con, but he had an awful drinking problem. So Jerry Kelly kicked him out of the house. So he came down and he boarded with my grandparents up in Dublin Gulshire. I don't know how he did that, but I think that's where they had the falling out, you know. And Con, I remember during the strikes, you know, especially after they murdered, they shot down 15 strikers right up here in the Anaconda Road. One of them was Kitten and Tom Manning, he was in Donegal. And of course they killed the Wobbly, Drake Little. He was right down here, and they drug him out of the building right here, tied him on the back of the car, and then drug him to Butte and lynched him down in South Montana. And Con Kelly was, his life was being threatened all the time. And he donated those copper doors at St. Patrick's Church. He donated them to the church in honor of his mother and his father, Jerry. But he used to come in, and he had four bodyguards. He came in the side door on Sundays during the strikes, and two bodyguards would stand outside, and two bodyguards would go inside the church with him. But it was pretty. They didn't have to do much to start a riot, I'll tell you. There was my other grandfather had a brother, and he went into a bar up in Centerville. He ordered a drink, and the bartender wouldn't serve him for some reason or other. So he went beyond the bar and poured himself a drink, and he shot him, he killed him. And my other grandfather, his sister, Honora Kelly, she was robbed and murdered here in Butte.
Oh.
Yeah. So it was a tough town.
When do you know roughly when that happened to your aunt Honora Kelly?
I would say probably in anywhere from 1910 to 1920, sometime.
Yeah.
I mean, there,
yeah.
I didn't. They don't tell you these things, you know. I got relatives, and I had my grandfather's sister. She was married to a guy named Larry. Her kid owns Sean Kelly's down there.
Yeah.
They just didn't want to talk about it. My family wanted to send my grandmother back to Ireland for a visit, and she wouldn't go. She said she never knew a day in Ireland she wasn't angry. You know, and she wouldn't go. So, I don't know.
That's really interesting. We've heard that from a couple of people. That
is that right?
You know, their grandparents or, you know, whoever it was belonged to them that had come from Ireland.
Yeah.
That they didn't want to go back.
Yeah. Well, I told you about sending for those books. Anyway, I have no doubt that I got the best Irish library in Montana.
So tell me again, you sent for those books to where?
No, I sent to the American Irish Historical Society for their journals.
Right.
Not about Butte, about their...
Yeah.
They asked me to write the story about Butte, but they haven't published a journal in a long time.
Yeah, so, but you have a collection of them here.
Oh, yeah, I have well over 500 books.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know anybody. Father O'Sullivan had a pretty good library.
So I believe, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So you grew up in Dublin Gulch?
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit of what it was like to live in Dublin Gulch.
Well, this was Corktown, and there was a hill, and there was Dublin Gulch. And you fought your way in, you fought your way out. but it was a good one. St. Mary's School. One time they taught Gaelic at St. Mary's School. They had a Gaelic class there.
Yeah.
My father, that's probably where my father picked it up. But a guy named Tuddy used to teach Gaelic at St. Mary's.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And I read a biography of Countess Markowitz. She tells about coming to Butte there and how she couldn't see how people could build their homes and the hills that were so steep, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Is this the house you grew up in?
Yeah.
So if you were to stand at the door of this house in your neighborhood in Dublin Gulch and look out, what, describe to me what the neighborhood looked like.
I'll show you pictures of it later, but
great.
Like I say, my family lived during the Depression, my parents got married, they got, bought a cabin off an old Irish miner named Matt Sullivan. A log cabin built up in the gulch. When I was a kid, there were stumps like that. There was heavily timbered up here, you know.
Yeah.
And all these houses up in the Anaconda Road were originally log houses. And people didn't know that till they sold to the company and they started tearing them down. They took the siding off. They're all log homes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, there were a lot of fires up in the Gulf. There were a lot of fires. There wasn't much fire protection. If a house burned, it burned. There were a lot of, you went up here, there was Lower Dublin, and then there was Dublin Gulch, and then there was Gilhooly Gulch, and Dugan Avenue, and Ridgely Avenue, and these were all parts of the neighborhood of the Gulch. Then there was the hill, and then there was Corktown. And then, of course, there was Muckerville, that was an Irish neighborhood. And Centerville was Irish and Cornish. The Irish and the Cornish, they didn't get along with the dam. Historically, you know, they got along good because the Cornish were a Celtic people.
Mm-hmm.
And historically, they got along great. In fact, Cornwall used to be called Curnow, and it comes from the Irish word Curn, which is Irish light infantry, you know. And they competed for jobs. Eventually, they intermarried, and they're all mixed up now.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of the Irish and the Cornish intermarried a lot. And so
what were the names of some of the households on your street in Dublin Gulch?
Oh, there were the Kellys. There were two or three families of Kellys, and there was the Dalys, my grandmother's family, and the Kearns and the Dennehys and the Lowneys, and the O'Neills and the Shays. A lot of them were half Irish, you know. There are a lot of Scandinavian Irish.
Yeah.
They're married a lot.
Can you remember any of their names?
I was talking to a couple the other night. The Bedros, they were Finnish Irish. The Olsons were Swedish Irish. The Hansons were Danish Irish. The Odlins were Norwegian Irish. And most of them were more Irish than they were Scandinavian, you know. But there are a lot of them, and I kind of got off the track there. Do you want me to read some of these things here?
Please, yeah.
Okay. A lot of this was apocryphal. I got it from my family that told me about them. There's a woman up the street here. She was in the Titanic. There's some fabulous people here. If you wrote their life stories, nobody would believe it. They think it was fiction, you know.
Every interview we've done, every story we get.
Yeah.
It's just fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was a woman up the street on the Titanic.
She was on the Titanic, yeah.
Did she survive?
Pardon?
She
survived. Yeah, she was, yeah. There were a lot of survivors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was her name, Tom, do you know?
I want to say Harrington, but there's so many Harringtons, I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it was Harrington. There was a John Harrington up here, my uncle told me about. He fought for Pancho Villa down in Mexico. And then there was a John O'Mahony, he was a Carconian. He was going around the Irish bars here back in the 1890s, trying to recruit guys to go down and fight for the Cubans again. They were fighting for their independence from Spain. And I don't know how successful he was, but he went down there and he became a colonel in the Cuban army.
No.
Yeah, and they call him El Tigre. He was the tiger. He's a war hero down there. John O'Mahony, yeah, he was from Butte. Then there was John Rooney. He was a naval veteran from the Civil War. He owned a mining claim up here by the Columbia Gardens where the pit is now. And when he died, he didn't have any family. He left the claim to the nuns down at St. James. And he was a naval veteran. He was on the Monitor, the Battle of the Merrimack and the Monitor, the Battle of the Ironclads. That's history, boy. And he was on the Monitor. He's buried out there in Mount Moriah, in the Civil War plot in Mount Moriah Cemetery out there. And my uncle, Dan, he was a hoisting engineer up at the Mountain Con. And my aunt used to send him up lunch, hot lunches. I take it up to him. And there was an old guy there, they call him the Major, Major Foley. Now when I was a kid in the 1930s, there were still Civil War veterans around here. They come around the schools on Memorial Day, they had big beards, Grand Army of the Republic.
Yeah.
And anyway, this guy here, Major Foley, he was an Indian fighter. And oh man, he used to tell some great stories. I don't know where he got the name Major at. He was a sergeant in the 5th Infantry over at Fort Keogh, out of Miles City. He fought against Chief Joseph up at Bear Paw Mountain. Fabulous guy. If I had a tape recorder now, oh man. Oh man. And then there's another, the Captain Hughes, and he was a hell of a soldier. He was a captain in the British Army in the Light Brigade at Balaclava, the Crimean War. That's 1857. Happily onward in the Valley of Death, Brother 600, Tennyson.
Yes.
Yeah, and he was at the charge of the Light Brigade at the Crimean War. He came back, he immigrated to America, he joined the American Army, he won the Congressional Medal of Honor in the Civil War. That's the highest award they can get. He came out here, the battle of the Big Hole over here against Chief Joseph. He was badly wounded over there. They took him and the rest of the wounded into St. James, because that was the closest hospital there. But boy, yeah, he was a hell of a soldier.
That's
I don't know how, if he survived or not. I don't know.
There's the story.
Oh, like I said, any of any of these here, you could write a book about them. You wouldn't believe the stuff they did. And there was Barney Hughes. The Fairweather Party discovered gold up here in Virginia City. Two of the party, a bunch were Irish. Barney Hughes and Mike Sweeney. And they knew once they went into Bannock and filed on the claims, there'd be a big gold rush. So they laid out claims for themselves, and then they laid out claims for their friends. So they, because once they went there, so Barney Hughes went into Bannock, and he filed on the claims, and sure enough, the whole town followed him back to where Virginia City is. But most of his claims were down around where Nevada City is, so that became an Irish enclave there.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Sweeney and Hughes? They laid claims for all their families, so the Irish settled around there. And they had a Fenian Hall there. They had a Fenian organization. See those mountains up in there?
Yes.
There's a ghost town up there called Highland City. They had a Fenian a cell up there. It's hard to believe that some of this stuff.
I wonder, was that Sweeney any relation? I should go and try and find out.
Yeah.
Maybe we have that.
Yeah. My sister's married to a kid from North Dakota. His name is Gary Brown.
Uh-huh.
His mother's a Sweeney.
Really?
Yeah, from North Dakota.
Yeah.
Yeah. the Sweeneys were Galloglass, Scottish,
right,
Scottish
Rogue,
move.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
yeah.
What I'm saying. They're still, and some of the people are still found the same occupations, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, oh, anyway, there, oh, I should have turned that on for you there. I'm sorry.
Oh, no,
yeah. Anyway, they, there was an English born Irish priest, his name was Father Kelleher. And he used to come into Virginia City and say mass for the Irish miners. And the longest prize fight in the history of the ring in America was fought up, I think, in the Fenian Hall up in Nevada City between Hugh O'Neill and Con Oram. And I don't know how long it lasted. It was a brutal affair.
Sure.
It lasted for hours. anyway, this Con Oram was in, and this Hugh O'Neill, he was a wagon master. He took some of the wagon trains out here, and he'd fight anybody. He was a tough son of a gun. Con Oram, he was an unusual guy. He owned a bar in Virginia City,
yeah.
But he didn't drink and he didn't smoke, and he was an altar boy for Father Kelleher.
What was his name?
Con Oram.
Oram?
Oram. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they had this terrible fight. Oh, you must be getting tired there.
Oh, no, I'm okay. I'm
okay?
Just going to move, if we can pause for just 2 seconds.
Yeah.
I'm going to
move
a couple of lights.
Okay, I have a pot here. And there was a guy named, they had a fight down here at Silver Bowl. A guy named Jack Gallagher fought a guy named Ward. And in the bare knuckle fight, a round was a knockdown. I won 105 rounds, won 4.5 hours, 4.5 hours, and Jack Gallagher in around the 97th round broke his arm, and he beat Oram so bad, or he beat Ward so bad, that he died the next day. So they had a warrant out for his arrest, so he had to leave town. And that was a brutal affair, 105 rounds.
When was that, Tom, do you know?
I was about 1880, somewhere in there.
Went on for 4.5 hours. You think somebody would have stopped them before they
yeah.
beat each other to death?
Oh,
effectively.
Yeah. Yeah. All the fighters came here, but there was against a lot of fight in the town. There was a city ordinance against, so they had to fight out of town. Another time, a guy up at the foot of Bigby, they had a fight up there. Red Holland and Boxcar Kelly, and they fought all the way down around Big Butte, down on the. Down always on the Caledonia Street, they fought in the city limits without knowing it, and they got arrested.
It's just this one once more.
I don't know, you probably know something about the Baron O'Keefe. Do you know anything about the Baron O'Keefe or the Missoula?
Somebody just mentioned him to me earlier, but tell me what you know.
Well, as I understand it, he calls himself Baron O'Keefe from Castle O'Keefe.
Uh-huh.
In Castle, he was a log cabin.
All right.
But they just sold his property down in the real estate outfit down there. They call him the Meadows of Baron O'Keefe on the far side of Missoula.
Oh, really? I didn't
yeah.
know that.
Yeah. Anyway, he was married to an English girl, and he was a young Irelander.
Yes.
He was a young Irelander. And he came out here, and General Marr, incidentally, I named after General Marr.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, I named after him. Yeah. But General Marr wrote to him once and asked him for $1,000. He never seen $1,000 in his life, you know. But they were going to. I imagine you got that book, Professor Evans.
Yes.
Yeah, I got it right there. I didn't read it yet. But Baron O'Keefe, there are two brothers, and he got a lot of prominent descendants. One of them was Horace Anderson. He was the governor here, Anderson. And another one was, I think, Toole, a historian, taught over at Montana U.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I went to Montana U for a while. About 50 years ago.
Yeah.
K. Ross too.
Yeah, K. Ross too, yeah. That was a descendant of Baron O'Keefe. And I don't know if you've ever been there, know anything about Garnet?
The town?
Went up to Garnet, yeah.
I spent quite a bit of time up there.
Oh, yeah, that's really neat. They got Dublin Gulch up there too. And Kelly's Saloon is in Dublin Gulch up there.
Oh, really?
And then there was a place over around the Bitterroot there called Fenian Gulch. I don't know exactly where it's at, and Tipperary Creek, and
yeah.
They're all over. They're
yeah.
all. You get some of these old Forest Service maps, and you look at the names of the creeks and gulches, you know,
mm.
There are Irish all over the place.
Yeah.
Holy mackerel. And then there was a Granite City. You know where that's at?
No.
That's up in the mountains outside of Phillipsburg. Had a population around 5,000. You ever been up there?
Mm-hmm.
And they had a population of 5,000 once. When I first went up there, they had the guard, the miners union hall up there. They still had pool tables in there. When the bottom fell out of the silver market back in 93, that town just shut down. Everybody just left. They left their furniture, they just left. I know five or six Irish families here that came down from Granite.
Yeah.
They had Wetchikot up there. The Donegal Row, that's where the Irish lived. The Donegal House, so it was a hotel and Irish boarding house. I know five or six families that came from there. They just left. The bottom fell to the silver market and they left. There was an old Cornish miner there. Myself and my friend Con Lowney used to go up there, and he stayed up all winter in this old cabin. And we'd buy a couple of six packs of beer and go in, and he'd tell us all these fabulous stories. Lived there all winter, and that boy, that's pretty.
That's tough.
Yeah. And let me see. Oh yeah, my sister and I, we owned a mine up there by Basin. It's a gold silver property. Buckeye is the name of it. We got gold ore up there. It'll go 4 ounces of gold at a ton, but nobody wants it. It's full of arsenic. Anyway, you go up Basin Creek and you go over the top and come down by Fort Missoula, or Fort Harrison. I'm sorry, Fort Harrison. And there was a town there called Rimini that used to be called Young Ireland. That was the name of it. They were all Irish miners when it was a gold camp. Later, it reopened as a silver camp, and they were mostly Italian, so they named it Rimini. In Italy, they pronounce it Rimini, I think, but in Montana, you say Rimini. And of course, there's the Irish over in Boulder Valley. You're probably acquainted with them.
Yeah.
And the Irish church and cemetery down in the valley.
Yeah, you saw that. Well, it wasn't great quality, but we used to there when we showed the film at the.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had some.
Yeah, from Boulder.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm getting off the track a little bit, but there's a guy up there. His name was Chris Keenan, and he was a hell of a guy. He went to sea at 16 during the Crimean War and the British Man of War, 16 years of age. Came to America. He was a scout for the Army during the Indian Wars. He was a logger down in the Redwoods before they stopped logging the Redwoods. He ran in the first Iditarod snow race up in Alaska. There was a movie made about it based on his life back in the 1930s. He died at 106 over Townsend. Yeah, and he's buried over in the Boulder Cemetery. Not in the Irish Cemetery, but in the Boulder Cemetery.
This was Chris Keenan?
Chris Keenan, yeah. He was a hell of a guy. He, I, him, and that, him and that there youth that I got together, they're both in the Crimean War. That's going back a ways.
That is.
Holy mackerel. Then there were a lot of Irish over in the Bitterroot. And then there was, of course, General Marr. He was involved with the Fenians.
Yes.
A lot of people think the Fenians may have, it may be the reason he was killed, he may have been assassinated because just getting off the track a little bit, but there was a boat coming up in Missouri. A company of the soldiers, all Irish, under Captain Hennigan. And they were being sniped at their Indian problems. The Indians were sniping them all the way up to Missouri. They had to stop for wood. And so Hennigan, on board was a lady of the evening and a British officer, which is not unusual. In the back in the 80s, there were British, French, German officers would come out and tour the American ports. Anyway, Hennigan, they pulled in, and it was pretty dangerous, Indians around there. So Hennigan says, everybody stay in their cabin, nobody move from their cabin. And he put sentries on duty. Anyway, this English officer was going to visit this lady of the evening, and one of the sentries shot him, killed him. And the guy that killed him, his name was Barry, and he was a Fenian. And a lot of people think that Marr was killed in revenge for this here, because he was probably, all these here army posts had a Fenian cell. There were a lot of Irish in the Indian Fighting Army.
Yeah.
In the Indian Fighting Army, 28.9% of the recruits were Irish immigrants. Almost one out of three. After the Civil War, the American Army was downsized from over a million men to 25,000, and they were spread pretty thin in these army garrisons in the frontier. And between the end of the Civil War and the beginning of the Spanish-American War, 30-odd years, over 40,000 Irish served in the American Army. Half of them were buried over here at the Little Bighorn. Have you ever been over the Bighorn?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like an Irish cemetery. And the old part, not the new part, but the old part. Yeah, so so a lot of people think Marr may have been killed because of that. But this guy, his name was Pat Miller, and he was dying of alcohol, acute alcoholism over in Missoula. And on his deathbed, he confessed that he was hired by the vigilantes to kill Marr, General Marr. And then he got better. He didn't die, and he recanted. He said, "No, but why would a guy confess to have killed somebody on his deathbed if he didn't do it?" You know.
Yeah.
So
he confessed to actually having done it, not just.
Yeah. Alcohol. Yeah, he confessed to having done it. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So sometime after that, they drug a body out of the Missouri. It was petrified, and they were taking him around the state in a carnival. A petrified body, and some people recognize him. It may have been Marr, General Marr.
Well, Marr had such an extraordinary life.
He did, yeah. He was quite a guy. Yeah.
It'd be appropriate for him to have an extraordinary death too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can probably get read that story in the Montana Historical Society. They have a magazine over there.
Yeah.
I read the article in one of their magazines, so you could get that. Over there, you know.
Yeah.
And then, let me see, where are we at here? There were a lot of Irish over in Confederate Gulch, that's over by Townsend over there. I went into the Catholic cemetery on Townsend, and boy, there were a lot of Irish over there.
What was the name of that gulch, Tom?
Diamond City and Confederate Gulch. Yeah. They're mostly Missourians. I read about gunfights between the Irish and Missourians. A lot of the Irish were Union Army veterans, and the Missourians were Confederate. But not all the Irish. Well, there were a lot of Irish in the Confederate Army. Judge Gagan down here, Judge Pat Gagan, his grandfather, he was in the Confederate Army. He was 18th Louisiana Cavalry, and he was taken prisoner Am I yelling too?
No,
far?
I'm just checking that that was correct. Not at all. Please go ahead.
He was in the Confederate. I was taken prison by Union Army, and he's paroled in Montana Territory. That's how he came out here. They had what they called galvanized Yankees. They go to these Confederate prisoners and they say, "You go out to Montana, handle the Indian situation, and you won't have. We'll let you go. We'll parole you, and you won't have to worry about fighting against your former comrades." So a lot of these guys, they went out to Montana, and so they got out here. They deserted and went to the gold rush, you know. Judge Gagin's family were Irish Confederates. And Molly Sheehan, she was the first white child up in Virginia City. Her family, the Sheehans, they were Carconians. They were Southern sympathizers. So there were a lot of Irish in the Confederate Army.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you see here. Oh yeah, anyway, there's this rancher over by Confederate Gulch. His name is Kelly Flynn. I met him once, and he just wrote a book about that area. You know, Fort Logan, Confederate Gulch, Diamond City. And you might want to talk to him.
What was his name?
Kelly Flynn.
Kelly Flynn.
Yeah, he just wrote a book about it, and I sent it over at the Historical Society over there. So he could probably tell you a lot about the Irish in that area, you know.
Yeah.
And then, the Finland Hotel here, that was built by Jim Finland. He came up here from the Comstock. And he wrote an autobiography, long out of print, they have a copy down at the library down near the Montana case, and he tells you a lot about the Irish and the Comstock in Virginia City, Nevada,
right.
And the Irish in Butte. It's really an interesting book.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got a piece in there about my Uncle Redneck. He was in politics here.
Your Uncle Redneck?
Yeah. And right across the street from the, before the Finland Hotel was there was a big hotel there called the McDermott. And then they built the Finland. And right across from there was an Irish newspaper. It's called the Rocky Mountain Celt. And there's still copies of it over at the Historical Society in Helena. And let's see here. Oh yeah. Right over the hill here, there's a Broadway Garage. Right next to the Broadway Garage, there was the Florence Hotel, and Marcus Daly built that for his Irish miners. It was a big hotel. There were 300 beds in it, and they had handball alleys in the back, and they had pool tables, and they had a good restaurant. They put up lunches for the miners, and there was a guy that lived there. His name was Thomas Byrne. He was a fierce Irish rebel. Somewhere around the time of the rebellion, he went back to Ireland. He was a minor in Butte. He went back to Ireland. And I don't know, I got a book, his name is in it, so I know he's involved in the rebellion.
In 1916?
Yeah. And anyway, when the Irish Free State was established, he was given an honorary position in the Irish Parliament, what they call the Dáil, is that
correct? The Dáil, yeah.
Yeah. He was given an honorary position because he was the last surviving officers in McBride's Irish Brigade that fought in the Boer War in 1899. In 1899, a bunch of guys, Irish from Butte, went down to South Africa, paid their own way down to join McBride's Brigade. Much more came up from Australia, a bunch more from Chicago. They went down and they were a tough bunch. They're excellent horsemen. And they operated behind the British lines, they blow up railroads or whatever. And here's the great thing, you know, this I say you wouldn't believe it. Thomas Byrne's one claim to fame was he once took Winston Churchill prisoner of war. He did. He took Winston Churchill prisoner of war during the Boer War.
Why?
He was Winston Churchill was traveling by rail. An open gondolas with two companies of the Dublin Fusiliers, and they were attacked by McBride's brigade. Actually, McBride's brigade was commanded by an Irish American West Pointer named Blake, but he was the chief recruiter. He was married to Maud Gardner.
Yeah. Right,
yeah. Yeah, and Anyway, they attacked the train, and the fusiliers jumped out of the gondolas and put in the square to put up a fight. And they seen the green flag, so they wouldn't fire on it. So they just surrendered. So Tom Byrne took Winston Churchill and took up the Dublin Fusiliers prisoner of war.
That's amazing.
That's hard to believe, isn't
it?
It
is.
And anyway, not too long ago, there was a guy in South Africa, they call them coloreds, they have white blood. And there was a guy named Robert McBride. And he was illegitimate son of Sean McBride, and he was a rebel down there. And Sean McBride, of course, he was executed after the East Germany uprising. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're great stories. Oh yeah, a couple of months ago, I read a book. My friend Steve Murphy, who lives down here in Finland, gave me an autobiography of Raoul Walsh. You remember Raoul Walsh?
No.
He was the director down in Hollywood. Anyway, I don't know how in the hell he got the name Raoul for an Irishman, you know. But he came from a real prominent Irish family in New York. And his family knew everybody. They knew Mark Twain. You know, all the literary people, and they were fairly well-to-do. But he ran away from home and went to sea, and he was shipwrecked. Later on, he went in Texas. He was a cowboy in Texas. He came up here, the Butte, around 1910, and he worked for a doctor. I can't think of the doctor's name. Then he lived here for 5 or 6 years. Then he went down to Hollywood. He became an actor in the silent movies. And later on, he became a movie director. He's a pretty good movie director. I can think of a couple of movies he directed. Gentleman Jim, Errol Flynn, about General Jim Corbett, he directed that. He directed For Whom the Bell Tolls with Gary Cooper, and who's the Swedish actress? What the heck's her name?
Ingrid Bergman,
yeah. Yeah, anyway, he told how he'd have lunch every day with Ernest Hemingway and Gary Cooper and tell them stories about Butte.
Wow.
Anyway, the company were buying out the east side over here. They're going to expand the pit. It never materialized. But they bought all those businesses. So Raoul Walsh came up here and he bought the back bars of several of these here saloons down here. Oh, they're beautiful back bars, all hardwood, hand carved, some of them, you know. And he had them shipped down to Los Angeles to use as props.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah, boy, it's a hell of a town one time.
It still is. Can we just take a pause for a second, Tom?
Let's switch
out. Oh, sure.
All right, we're good to go.
Okay. I said before about Molly Sheehan. She was the first white child over in Virginia City, and she married Peter Onan. He was an Irish Canadian, and a really highly respected Indian agent. Ronan Montana is named after him. Lake Mary Ronan is named after her, Molly Sheehan.
Yeah.
She got a book out, The Frontier Woman. It's an interesting book about the Irish in early day Montana.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Higgins. Now this is, I'm kind of confused here. Because there's two pioneers over in the Missoula area named Higgins. One of them is an Irish Canadian, and he was a pioneer over there. And then Higgins Avenue and Higgins Bridge and are named after him. And there were a lot of Irish Canadians here in the early days, a lot of Irish Canadians. Dan Hennessy built Hennessy Departments there. He was an Irish Canadian.
Is that right?
An old cowboy up in Lincoln a couple of years back. His name was Bill O'Neill, and he was from Helenville. And his family came out here and covered a wagon to the gold rush at Blackfoot City. And he knew all about the Irish, and then they came out. And then there was, I told you about the Rimmer O'Neill, didn't I?
Yes.
Yeah. And. Glendive, that was originally named Glendale after a place in Ireland. There's an Irish nobleman came out here, I can't think of his name. He came out here hunting anyway, and he named the creek Glendale Creek. And he didn't, his handwriting wasn't very good, so when they named Glendive, that was named Glendale, it was after a town in Ireland.
Huh.
And Innes over here, William Innes, he was an Irishman, albeit an Orangeman, but he was a road builder. In the early days of Montana, there, before it became a state, there was no way of collecting taxes to fix roads. So an entrepreneur would agree to build 10 miles of road, then he'd cross the road over the river or a gulch, put in a bridge, and it'd be a toll bridge, and he would charge everybody to go over that. And that's how they put these roads in. So Innes, William Innes, he built a road from the Virginia City to Innes. Cameron, he was a Scotsman, he built 10 miles of road. And then the Creighton brothers, they're Irish, they brought the first telegraph into Montana. And they built about 10 miles of road up to Medicine Valley. They had two bridges, two toll bridges, the twin bridges there.
Right.
Yeah. And then there was they went down, after they left Montana, they went down and founded Creighton University down in Omaha. Jesuit school. Then there's a road going from Twin Bridges to Dillon, and there was a guy there from Dublin, his name was Bob Dempsey, and he called the settlement there Dublin. And he was married to an Indian girl, and he had a bunch of kids. I went to school with an Indian kid named Dempsey, and I'm sure he's one of his descendants. And he was a mountain man, he came here in the 1830s. And then later he moved over in the Deer Lodge Valley, and I found a settlement over there called Dempsey and the Dempsey Lakes up in the mountains out of Warm Springs over there. And let me see. Dennis Larry, he came here in the 1860s. He founded the Parrot Mine right up here.
The which mine?
The Parrot.
The Parrot?
Yeah, it was really a rich mine. The gold silver property, you know.
Right.
And then the other Irish mines here was the Parnell, the Hibernian, the Robert Emmett, and the Michael David. And then they had the Gaelic football teams here. They had the Wolf Tones from Butte and the Emeralds from Anaconda.
When would that have been, Tom?
That had been in the 20s, in 1920s.
And that was Gaelic football?
Yeah.
Was there ever Gaelic, the other Gaelic sport of hurling here, do you know?
I think there were. Handball was a big sport here.
Handball, of
yeah.
course, yeah. Handball,
yeah.
Still prevalent, of course.
Yeah, it's an Irish sport,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And 1880, there were 6,648 Irish in Montana. Let's see.
That was in
1880? 1880, yeah. They were shipping guns to Ireland, and they're sending people back to fight. They had several companies of Irish volunteers here from here in Anaconda, and they were called the Sarsfield Rifles, the Bonner Guards, and the Robert Emmett Guards. And they had uniforms, they had guns, and.
Did any of them come back, Tom?
Pardon?
Did they come back to Butte?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you that. No. I'm sorry, your father O'Sullivan's dead, because he knew everything about the Irish.
Yeah.
Kevin Shannon's the next best to bed. He's
yeah.
a great guy. Kevin,
yeah, he
yeah.
is a great
yeah.
guy.
Did, in 18, Marcus Daly was kind of a complex guy. A lot of the Irish didn't like him, you know. I'm not aware of Marcus Daly making any effort to bring Irish miners here. The word just got out there was an Irishman in charge in Butte, and they came here. But he wasn't what you call an Irish nationalist, you know. He joined the Masons. He married a Protestant, raised his children Protestant. But when the APA riots had down here in 1884, he closed the mines. And he told the guys to go down and duke it out with them. And they were really riots. There were bloodshed down there, you know. They had to bring in the National Guard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Between the APA and the Irish. But Marcus Daly, wishy-washy, you know, but he did send them down to fight the APAs.
Yeah.
And
can you just clarify for the record what APA stands for?
There are two groups called the APA. Both of them were very anti-Catholic organizations. The American Protective Association was not only anti-Irish, they were anti-immigrant. They didn't like any immigrants. The American Protective Association were all Irish. They were Orangemen. They were Irish Protestant.
Right.
Yeah. I got a friend, his name is Jim Keenan. He runs the Keenan Jewelry store out here in the plaza. And he's the biggest Irishman you ever seen. I mean, he lives and dies Ireland. He knows more about it than I do. And he's an orange one, you know. But he's really a fanatic about the Irish.
Yeah.
Good
well,
hell of a soldier, too. He won the Silver Star and two Purple Hearts in Korea.
Oh,
hell of a soldier, yeah. And then there was...
What was his name, Tom?
Jim Keenan.
Jim Keenan.
Yeah. Oh, he knows that one. Oh, he'll be sitting around there and he'll just break into song, you know. He's singing all the time. And that's about all I got in the notes there.
Tell me, Tom, you went to school here in Butte?
Yeah.
Where did you go to school?
I went to Central. I went to St. Mary's in Central. I went to Carroll, and I went to a school in mines at Montana Tech, and I went to U for a while.
What did you study at Carroll?
I was just a liberal arts and liberal arts.
Uh-huh.
I was going in the history major, but and then I was going to go into journalism. Then I ran out of money.
And at the school of mines, were you studying mineralogy or?
No. I was. They had the liberal arts course there.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the same at the U?
Yeah. Yeah. I was taking a major in history at the U. Burley Miller was my teacher at the U. Yeah.
But you didn't finish?
No, one semester I went down
right.
The U. Yeah.
So what did you do then?
Oh, I did a little bit of everything. I retired from the post office as a mail carrier. But I worked in the mines. I worked as a survey crew. The Anaconda Company. I had millions of jobs. I worked for United Airlines down in San Francisco.
When you were in San Francisco, did you live there for long?
A couple of years.
Yeah. And have you lived anywhere else outside of Butte, aside from?
No, just Missoula and Helena, you know.
Right.
Yeah. I used to. You're from County Clare, right?
I am. Yeah.
Kevin was to tell me you're from County Clare.
Yes.
Used to go to a bar down in San Francisco, the Four Provinces, a kid named Chris O'Kelly, he was from County Clare.
Yeah,
yeah.
My mother's from West Cork, and my father was from Kerry.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
He was a cop, so
uh-huh.
I grew up in Clare.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's where we ended up.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to hang out with that Irish crowd down in San Francisco, you know.
Yeah.
Let's go to Irish picnics and I know.
Yeah. Did you like living in San Francisco?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
It got old after a while. It gets old. I went on strike. I left here to get away from the strikes. I ended up 3 month strike down there, United Airlines, you know. So I didn't gain anything by going down there, you know.
And when did you come back to Butte?
Oh, I was about 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
I kind of lose track.
You were glad to come back.
Oh, yeah, I was glad to come back, yeah. I was driving a truck for a New Bro drug company for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're quite the historian, even if you didn't finish
the
degree.
Oh, my memory is gone, or I could have told you a lot more.
Oh, that's an extraordinary amount of information.
Yeah. I'll show you a picture in a minute.
Excuse me.
I couldn't believe it. I see the names popping out of me.
That's extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
I don't know who owns that bar now. I don't think Kelly Larry owns it anymore. And this is him. This is this guy here. And that's him right there.
Is this from the Lord of the Wires book?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. been kind of rummy. I'm getting, I buy the same book twice.
Huh?
I buy the same book two and three
oh.
times. So yeah, I got two of these. You can have that if you want it.
Oh, thank you.
Uh-huh.
I'll have you sign for that.
I don't know if you ever seen this. Did you ever see that?
No, I haven't.
That's the history of Irish in America. Professor Ammons writes the deal in here about Montana.
Yes.
That's a
wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you have a photograph of Dublin Gulch.
Yeah, yeah. This was just before the Kelly mine went in at the village.
Well,
that's by our family home. That's my, I was telling about that meeting of the family home, you know.
Uh-huh.
This is where I was born. There's a log cabin my father built to. This is my grandmother's house, the Daly's. They're just putting the Kelly mine in there.
What was the name of the street, Tom?
Summit.
Summit Street.
Summit Street, yeah. That was the heart of Dublin Gulch.
So is that this house?
No, that's tore down. This house would be up here. That's St. Mary's School. That's where I went to school.
And what street was St. Mary's on, Tom?
Wyoming.
Wyoming.
North Wyoming, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's at St. Mary's School.
Oh, is this you?
Yeah.
Is this you here?
Yeah. They're almost all dead. That's the Gulch during the winter time. This is St. Mary's School. My father was going there. This is another one of my family home up in the Gulch. My family are all carpenters, so they build a nice house.
Beautiful. So is that house knocked, or what happened to that house?
That's tore down.
It's tore down.
Company. There's my great-grandfather, Jack Kelly, and his son, Willie, up in the Gulch. This is the Dublin Gulch baseball team. But here's a great picture here. This is the Dublin Gulch gang. Boy, they're a tough-looking bunch. That's over 100 years old, that picture.
This one?
No, this one here.
So that was the Dublin Gulch gang?
Yeah.
Those are all the kids that used to hang out
yeah,
together?
Yeah, well, they had them big families. They all had big families, you know.
And what year do you think that photograph dates from, roughly?
I would say about 1905.
1905?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my father.
That's your father?
That's my Uncle Dan. He got his hay over his head. That's my Uncle Mike. He got a chew of tobacco.
This is why I asked you about the costumes for the Reds.
Yeah,
those
yeah.
are the kind of things.
Yeah,
I've
seen them. Yeah, right. Yeah.
So that was your which uncle?
Dan. He was a hoisting engineer.
Are you good? Can I have
yeah.
you point those out again, Tom, if you wouldn't mind?
Oh yeah, that's my father, Tom, and that's my Uncle Dan with a hair on his head. That's my Uncle Mike with a chew of tobacco. That's my Uncle Redneck.
And again, as I said, this the fact that he has hay over his head,
mm-hmm.
That would have been one of the costumes that the mummers or the Wren boys would have worn. They
yeah.
would have worn hay masks.
Hey,
so
yeah.
maybe that's what he was doing.
It might have been, yeah. yeah. That's my Uncle Willie. And that's my Uncle my Aunt Margaret. She didn't like the way she looked, so she freaked her face off.
Oh,
man.
What a shame.
Isn't that a great picture, though?
That's fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And where did you get that from, Tom?
One of my uncles, Redneck, my Uncle Redneck, he had a great strap book. He was in politics, you know.
Yeah.
And he ran for sheriff, and he was clerk to the court. And And he donated it to the archives when we got over there. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. This is the original. This is Corktown. That's where we'd be right here.
Yes.
And that's a picture of Corktown. Winter day there, isn't it?
Yeah. And when do you think that might have been roughly?
Well, this wasn't too long ago. That it was probably 1950s. That's long, a long time ago. Not for me, it isn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a Anaconda Road. This is the Never Sweat. This is the St. Lawrence and the Anaconda. This is called Gilhooly Gulch. This is the Anaconda Road, and Dumpling Gulch is over here. These are the ore cars, you know.
Oh,
these are Irish boarding houses in Gilhooly Gulch.
Look at how close they are to the railway line.
Yeah.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
That's the Never Sweat mine. You wouldn't be interested in that.
No, that's a lovely photograph.
I got a signed autograph of Jack Dempsey.
You did? Where did you get that from?
My uncle, Redneck, he got it from him. That's his signature. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is Tom Walker. His brother was a Postmaster General, and he's President of Roosevelt's campaign manager.
And this was 19...
Oh, that was back in
1930s.
1930s, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's take a look at that. Did you get the autograph of that? I'll take it again just in case. Says Jack Dempsey to Tom Walker, is that right?
Yeah, he was a brother of John Walker, the Postmaster General.
So
he was a friend of Redneck's. And
Tom Walker to Redneck Kelly. Redneck, my compliments to you, Tom Walker. So he got the autograph photograph for him?
Yeah, yeah. That's his. Dempsey signed that. That's his signature, Dempsey. This is we'd be right here. This is where that motel is right here.
Yes.
That's right there. This is where they dragged Frank Little out of there and lynched him, you know. But this was the Dorothy block that belonged to Heinze. He was one of the copper kings.
Uh-huh.
He built that for one of his girlfriends. Her name was Dorothy.
One of his girlfriends.
Yeah. And see, this would be a Dublin Gulchman. That's this house right here.
That's this house?
Yeah.
My goodness.
And this is Hungry Hill, and it was named after Hungry Hill in Ireland, you know.
In West Cork.
West Cork, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. These are drawings. This is the house next door over there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
She's pretty good, this Cooney girl. She's. Oh, and another thing I forgot to tell you. There were different groups of Irish came here. There were. You hear the Cleats, the Cleetamores?
No.
Well, they were here. They came from Wicklow.
Uh-huh.
And at one time there were mines in Wicklow, and they went over to northern England to Cleetamore and worked in the mines, and they came to Bute. They're English-born Irish.
Yes.
Yeah, and they call them Cleats, Cleomores.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was Mahats. They were the people who come from the hot water country down in Virginia City,
mm-hmm.
Nevada. And because it's desert country, they call them Mahats, and they kind of hung together. They weren't all Irish, but most of them were.
Yeah.
And what other group was I going to tell you about? Oh, I'll send it again.
to.
Yeah, I'll take those out.
Those are beautiful.
Yeah, I'll see if I got some more there.
How are we doing?
Good.
Okay,
yeah,
go ahead.
This is Michael, Mike, Margaret, Mimi, Francis Rednick, Dan, Willie, John, Tim, and my father Tom.
Do you know when that photograph was taken, Tom?
I would say about 1947. That was pretty close. I have some better pictures of the Gulf Stream. And that's a pretty good picture of the Gulf Stream. Then, you know, this was after all the fires. Now, there used to be houses all over here at one time.
Yeah.
Let's see, Mary's, they're almost all dead. That's Kevin Shannon's brother.
Oh, right.
This is a very good picture.
Oh, that's beautiful, yeah.
That's the school, and that's St. Mary's Church, the old one, you know.
Yeah.
This was Corktown. It was a washer day.
No kidding. Look at how busy it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a busy place. St. Mary's band.
Oh.
That's me.
Oh, what did you play?
I don't know. This is a priesthood. I don't know where it came from. I found it up in the hills, you know. They call it the priesthood because they had a cross on it. Somebody carved it, you know, on the rock up there.
Oh, really? Where?
It's not Indian because it's got a mustache.
Where was it at?
Up north of here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just found in
it's
the
underwater now. It's under the pit water. The lake.
Yeah.
Those two of my uncles when they made their first communion.
There's the house.
And this is a picture of the Gulf looking the other way. But this, you know, this is when I was a kid. But in the old days, there were houses all over the place. There,
mm-hmm.
There were a lot of fires, you know, a lot of fires there.
Yeah, and you said they didn't. There was a fire; they just pretty much let it burn out.
Yeah, there was not much you could do about it, you know.
Yeah.
And there was no fire protection until later on, you know. You want a copy of this?
Oh, yes, please.
Okay.
I would love one.
Uh-huh.
Of course, I'll have to get you to sign another form.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I'll put that
welcome.
In my folder. I'll have you sign this now.
Sure. I'll take those. This is the longest, shortest day of the year, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You're thereabouts. And have you signed this?
Sure.
And I'll just write on the back of this when you're done. So this was the.
Where was that again?
Yeah, so this is the. This is a deal gift form.
Oh, right here.
Yeah, so if you can print and then sign under.
Okay.
Dublin
Gulf Stream.
Do you think it was roughly
somewhere between 1905 and 1910, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
About 100 years. I don't know how they ever got them all together like that, all those kids.
I have you identifying them on film, so I love that picture of your father with his head there. So I'm still recording here, Tom, so if I could just ask you one final question.
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. I hope I didn't mess you up.
Not at all. This is fantastic. I could talk to you all day, but I'm just conscious of your time.
Oh, I'm not doing anything. I gave a lot of these to Debbie Shea, and she's going to come out with a book, I think, in February about the Irish Review.
Yes, she's the one I've spoken to on the phone, but I need to interview her. So my last question to Tom is, if you were to write the history of the Irish in Montana, what do you think should be included?
Well, you know, the Irish kind of shunned farming and the kind of the famine, you know. But they didn't shun ranching. They were very successful at ranching. The King Ranch in Texas, that's the biggest ranch in the country, that's Irish control. And the Howie Ranch in eastern Montana, the biggest ranch in Montana, that's Irish control.
What's the name of it?
The Howie, H-A-U-G-H-E-Y, I think.
Howie, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't distinguish between ranching. There are two different cultures, you know, the ranching and farming. And so they may have they didn't go much for farming, but they did ranching. I mean, there's like a lot of, you know, prosperous ranches over in the Boulder Valley and up in the Nevada Valley, and so I think I don't think nobody, not many people know about them, you know.
Yeah. And what would you define as the difference between farming and ranching in the Montana context?
Well, I don't know. I think they just took to it. I think they just, there were a lot of good rodeo cowboys come out of those communities, you know.
Yeah.
Patty Ryan and these people, they were world-class cowboys, you know. And they just took to ranching. And I don't think people realize how successful they were, you know.
Yeah.
You read about the Irish back east, and I realize, you know, the streets in Boston and New York, they were just teeming with Irish orphans, you know.
Yeah.
They had a tough time of it. You look at those kids down in São Paulo now, they've got a tough time of it, but they don't go through a winter, an American winter, you know. And not many of them lived very long. They had these orphan trains, you know. They're taking the orphans out here, and they went all the way from the 1860s down to the 1920s. And nearly all those orphans before the turn of the century were Irish. And this Protestant ministers took them out there and settled them with families. Some got good homes, some just slave labor, you know.
Yeah.
But they have a tough time of it, and up in Montana, they hit the ground running out here. You know, they're pretty successful. You know, and they still are. If Dennis Washington's the richest man in Montana, Tom Kenealy's got to be the second richest. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think they just took to ranching as something they just they were good at. You know, they were good at it. But there's a lot of more than you realize, you know, in small towns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll make sure to note that. That's something we're finding too in our research.
Yeah.
There are a lot of Irish involved in ranching communities.
Yeah. I'll tell you something though. The Irish, they didn't last long in the heartland. No, where there's Irish enclaves like Butte and Anaconda and Helena, that's one thing. But when they got out in the heartland, they went and worked for the BLM and the Forest Service, and they went in these small towns. In a generation, they were gone. They were Protestant, and a lot of them were Masons. I know two fundamentalist Protestant ministers here that come from Irish families. They were altar boys, in fact, one time. And that's the, I found this not only in Montana, but in the reading that I've done. I read a book by a girl named Coffey. Her family were famine immigrants. They went out and settled in the Illinois prairie. And later on, they moved on to Nebraska. And she said, all my uncles and my father and all my uncles were in the Ku Klux Klan. She said, I don't want you to think that we disliked the blacks. She said, we just didn't like the Catholics. So within a generation or two, they were gone. And that's true. I know when I was growing up, if you had an Irish name, we would just assume you were Catholic. That never was true, because the Irish that came here before the famine, for the most part, settled in the South, you know,
yeah.
And they're still there, but they're gone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess my final question comes with a subsection. Why? I mean, I'm obviously thrilled that you are participating in the gathering, but what was it about the project that drew you? What is it about your Irish heritage? What does your Irish heritage mean to you?
Well, I'm getting old, and I'll be kicking the bucket one of these days, and I figured I'd like to get, you know, I'd like to leave it to somebody, you know.
Yeah.
And I know some things and nobody else knows, like Gilhooly Gulch, nobody could tell you where that was.
Yeah.
So I like to get that down on
right.
paper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your Irish heritage is something that means a lot to you. In
oh
case.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Your range of knowledge is phenomenal.
Oh, geez, I can't remember half the things. I mean, 20 years ago, I probably taught you a lot more, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I one of these days, when you're over at the archives, or I'd ask him for those copies of the interviews we had with that.
Yes.
Which, oh, that's another thing I forgot to tell you. Johnny Kelly, he was a awful drinker, and they had some neighbors by the Bell Diamond, and their name was Cransberry. And one of the Cransberries was the governor of Hawaii. So that's why I think Johnny Kelly went down to Hawaii. They talked him into going down there to get away from his drinking buddies. So he went down there and he got involved in a high-profile murder case down there. This would be in the 1930s.
In Hawaii?
He was the county attorney for Honolulu. And this murder case involving a naval officer at Pearl Harbor and a Japanese girl had strong racial overtones. And they made a movie about that for television. I can't think of the name of the movie. And I've seen a book out about it, too. But anyway, Johnny Kelly went up against Clarence Darrow. And Clarence Darrow was a sharp burn. And that's my sister. Clarence Darrow, excuse me one minute, please.
Pause for a second.
Anyway, you know who Clarence Darrow was, the monkey trial, you know. So anyway, he went up against Clarence Darrow, and he beat him. And the guy that interviewed me for that Irish deal, you know, he called me. He was a Polish kid. I think his mother was Irish. He was from Kansas, but he called me from Honolulu, and Ellen Crane told him that I was related to Johnny Kelly. So he called me, and they were making this PBS movie about Clarence Darrow, and they wanted to know more about Johnny Kelly, but I couldn't tell him anything.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Bob McCarthy told me that Marcus Daly educated the Kelly brothers, but I'm not too sure about that, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure about it. But he was a good lawyer, but he died young. He was alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't handle the booze.
Did he stay out in Hawaii, or did he come back to
No,
you?
I stayed out there. He got married, too. I didn't know that. He had a son, this kid told me. I taught this kid from Honolulu for quite a while. But I told him all I could know, but we didn't socialize with them. They were a different world. in this town, boy, you were with the company or against them, and we were against them.
Thank you so much, Tom. This
oh, you're welcome.
Fantastic.
Seems
really
I got you. I ran you in for more time.
Not at all. This is why we're here. We'd stay all night if we could, but we better